Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AFC West Show. We're coming to you live tonight on the second day of September 2015, right before the final games of preseason, and then we're on to the big show. Tonight, I'm joined, as always, by the co-host, Daryl, and if you want to give us a call, feel free to 646-668-8837. Or hit us up on Twitter at AFC West Show or in the chat room. Daryl, what's going on tonight?
Hey, it's a great late summer evening, and days are getting shorter. The temperature is fine here and around the country. I know people are getting ready for some football and excited. We're here up to week four, and last week we had some interesting games. I don't know where you want to start, but maybe we should just start with the games in just a minute here. But I'm excited that after, I guess it'll be 9 days, we'll have our 8 days, I should say, we'll have our first regular season game. And Labor Day will be in the books, and I guess officially summer is over.
Well, you know, it's coming to an end here with a late Labor Day weekend for any of those people who have their last hurrah of the summer. Enjoy the weekend and make it a good one. But we got some football to talk about before you get to that getaway weekend. Let's start off with the Chiefs and the Titans. We had Kansas City at home against the Tennessee Titans, and Alex Smith was sharp as a knife with a 34-10 rout in preseason, throwing for 171 yards, two touchdowns in less than a half. Really showed that he is ready for the regular season.
Well, that was a big difference from a quarterback in Denver to be discussed later. However, the Kansas City Chiefs look like they are doing well. Tennessee is a team that needs to find out what they have, and I'm sure they were doing it from what I saw. I think what's interesting about this game, besides the AFC West side, which we'll talk about in a few minutes in more detail, is Marcus Mariota and his development. It'll be interesting to see as they go into the season how he performs and, you know, what the preseason translates to, because a lot of teams play pretty vanilla defense in the preseason. And, of course, Marcus Mariota was highly touted with Jameis Winston. He has some growth to do, as all rookies, but especially since he didn't take snaps under the center in Oregon, I think that'll be an issue in the NFL. But Kansas City looks like they're ready to go. We can talk more about their depth, their cuts, and things that are going on in Kansas City. What about the Denver and San Francisco game, Darren?
Well, you know, Denver Denver played at home. It was their first home game of the preseason. And with that game, you know, the Denver Broncos offensive line did a pedestrian job, but more of the errors that were caused by the running backs. But Peyton Manning had a lackluster performance, 14 of 21, 124 yards with one interception. The big point of this game was the Denver defense, who really limited Colin Kaepernick when they had their starters in. He could not complete a pass. They had minimal passing in the first half. The baseball score was 8-3 at the end of the half, and with that it was 8-0 when the Broncos starters left the game. However, Peyton Manning was unable to get a touchdown. Daryl, we can talk a little more about that during the actual time, but what did you think of the performance this last weekend?
Well, Peyton Manning obviously looked uncomfortable. He didn't do great under center, going back to talk about Marcus Mariota. Peyton Manning has not played under center in a long time. He prefers the pistol or shotgun, and that's a point of emphasis. And so I don't know if Denver puts a pistol in or not. I know what they prefer to do, and that is to run the Gary Kubiak offense that is predicated on two tight ends and a lot of running. I just don't know where Peyton Manning is, and I think that's the big question in Denver. Like you said, we'll talk about that more later on. I want to give high praises to the defense because they got a sack in the first quarter against Colin Kaepernick that turned into a safety. So they were on fire, and that baseball score you talked about wasn't just scoring a 2-point conversion. It was because of a couple field goals and a safety, which, you know, you get those in preseason, but a safety anytime for the defense is something to be celebrated, and that defense looks really good. There were a couple of long runs given up, but that was after Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware were out of the game. Now, Seattle played against San Diego, and this was a tight game. A field goal decided everything. 16-15, Seattle beat San Diego. Darren, tell us a little bit about that game.
Well, you know, the game came down to a 60-yard field goal by Steven Hauschka. It was kicked with 16 seconds left in the game to give the Seattle backups a win over the San Diego Charger backups. The game was pretty much very close the remainder of the time. You know, talking about the AFC West, Phillip Rivers was 13 of 19 for 140 yards. Had a pretty good performance overall. Along with that, their defense was able to get a sack on the Seahawks quarterback, Russell Wilson. But the one story has been the running game, and still they are not impressing us in the preseason yet.
Yeah, I know we want to talk about that in a little bit because that is a big question. I'm going to just move on and go over to Oakland versus I wanted to say Carolina, but it's actually Arizona. And that game came down to the final minutes, and it appears that Arizona had the backups to beat the backups of Oakland 30-23. I think what I found interesting is both Carson Palmer and Derek Carr struggled in their game. Carson Palmer was 8 of 22 and Derek Carr was 18 of 34, but neither had a touchdown and both had an interception. Carson Palmer actually had two interceptions. Their average yards per catch that they threw were pretty pedestrian. The highest was 6.3 by Derek Carr and Carson Palmer 4.7. You'd really like to have your numbers over 5. So I think Derek Carr gets the nod on that. But, gosh, I mean, preseason, you'd like to be able to throw a touchdown, as you alluded to earlier. What are your thoughts on this game and what comes out of it?
Well, you know, in this game, I think that the Raiders saw why they were happy that they let Carson Palmer out of Oakland. He just, you know, coming off his injury, he looked terrible. There was not much to say about it. He could not hit the receivers. I watched a good amount of this game, and, you know, it was just ugly. The half score was a 12-3. 20 of their 30 points for the Cardinals were scored in the fourth quarter, with the final touchdown coming on the 11-yard run with 31 seconds. I think the item of note, you know, Derek Carr, when he didn't play for a whole game and threw 34 passes, in the time he was in there for 213 yards, that tells you a lot. You know, this is a Raider team that's traditionally known for passing, but really wants to stake their new identity on a combination of the running with the pass, and along with that, Trent Richardson and Latavius Murray, who both are running backs there, were not able to do much. And I know that the Raiders are really counting on Latavius Murray this year. So that'll be something to watch going forward. A side note on this, you know, Amari Cooper, their first-round draft pick out of Alabama, he did look solid. 4 receptions, 62 yards. he did have a couple passes that he just couldn't get to, wasn't on the same page as Derek Carr. I think that'll be something that comes as the season goes on. And we can talk a little bit about the Raiders here in the team updates, but definitely, you know, a couple of sloppy-looking teams for the first. And I think that what also shows from that game is just the depth on the Raiders. They do not have that depth, just like any team that's rebuilding and trying to get back up in the hierarchy of the teams with upper echelon teams. So when it came down to the third stringers and second stringers, they just really were not able to keep up with the Cardinals as much.
Well, let's talk about the realities of the NFL for a minute. Being that we live in San Diego, we hear a lot of rumblings around the town, and Charger fans are rightfully concerned. I don't know. Are the Chargers staying or are they going, Darren? What is the feeling? And obviously, Charger fans are very much up in arms to think that their beloved team would leave. It's been a long way to get to here. What have you heard lately?
Well, you know, I've already purchased my PSL for the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm looking forward to the open-air farmers market, looking forward to the incredible atmosphere that will take place at the new stadium in Los Angeles. It's really going to be a destination with the West Coast Hall of Fame, the headquarters of the NFL Network. You know, to me, this is a done deal for the Chargers. They want out. They are not even negotiating with the city. I think for the city to even really make anything happen, they would have to give a waterfront stadium, something they're not willing to do, something that isn't on the table. Mayor Falconer in San Diego is doing what he can, going through good faith measures so that he can say, look, I tried to keep your Chargers during my term. They decide to leave. It's on them.
Well, it would be, first of all, did Kiefer Sutherland give you your seat tickets or passes to the game? Did he welcome you personally? Because I know he's the spokesperson there, right?
He is, and he will be greeting me. He sold me on the full event and everything.
I just want to know how much did that cost you there, big folks?
Well, you know, this is L.A., so we're talking at least about $50,000 to $100,000 for my PSL.
I'm going to be sitting with you, I guess, to watch the L.A. Chargers. I want to root for the local guy. I appreciate the love of a team, and it would be devastating to see them go. I don't even want to entertain tonight the idea of the San Diego Raiders. Some people are talking about the Raiders moving in here or maybe even Jacksonville. But, you know, San Diego has had the Chargers for a long time, and I know they weren't originally from here, originally in L.A., but it would be a devastating thing to the city and the fans. And I just hope it doesn't get to that. But I'm starting to feel more and more along the lines of you that it probably is going to be a done deal. Money is the driver. So let's put our money on the games coming up and what's going on in the AFC West. Darren, let's start with the Raiders.
Well, you know, we talked about the Oakland Raiders and what happened in their game against the Cardinals. You know, with that, I did mention that the running backs were both kind of lackluster with, I believe, 40 yards that Trent Richardson did get in all of his carries. But from what I understand, his time in the NFL has come to an end.
Yeah, that's a terrible story. Third-round draft pick that is no longer with the team. He may get another shot, but it's running short. The hourglass, the sand in the hourglass, it's creeping out. There's not much left. I don't know what the deal is. The guy just hasn't been able to stick with the team. I don't know whether it's his attitude, his effort, or what. But for such a touted running back to be such a bust, it doesn't bode well. And certainly I hope he, whatever he does, whether it's in the NFL or in the future, that he gets things together better than his NFL career so far.
You know, that is very true, and he was a first-round draft pick, which has never never really made it. So that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, what about C.O. Moore, who missed most of last season and also the off-season and preseason? I guess he played last season but missed most of the off-season and preseason.
Yeah, he had some injury issues, and there was also questions about his maturity. And with the change in the defensive, well, first of all, with Jack Del Rio coming in, a new staff, there's a connection there with the player, and I'm blanking on him, I'm sorry. He came from Seattle and has replaced Moore. It doesn't look like Moore is going to get back in. He may be on the bubble to be cut. Some people are talking about that. But the alternative is to let him try and play at the strong side and see how he plays. But there's a connection between the coach and the replacement player from USC. They both were together, and they were together in Seattle, I believe. So it doesn't look good for C.O. Moore getting that starting job back. His best bet probably is to try playing strong side linebacker. You know, an interesting thing going on up in Oakland, they did sign the linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, who was a captain for the Cardinals. We'll see if he comes in to bring depth or if he still has anything in the gas tank. But he was the Walter Payton Man of the Year for the Redskins and has played for several years at a fairly high level. I don't know what's left in his tank.
Well, interestingly enough, he plays the same position as C.O. Moore. So kind of an interesting thing. You know, Lorenzo Alexander did suffer that Liz Frank injury in 2013. And it'll be interesting to see if he makes, you know, as you said, he comes over from Arizona, and he was one of their first cuts there in the Arizona camp. So interesting thing to watch. I know that there's a lot going on along with that in the Raiders. I believe that we talked about the wide receivers, and am I hearing right that Kimbrell Tompkins was let go from the Raiders?
He was let go, and it makes some room on that wide receiver core. You know, they got a little bit older in the wide receiver core, and I know they're trying to get younger. Amari Cooper had some shots, but just couldn't really make things happen. The other thing that occurred was that Josh Harper, the wide receiver that played with Derek Carr at Fresno State, was cut as well. And so I think they're really trying to figure out their wide receiver core and kind of get younger at that position and, of course, get better as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, you know, we said that they were ready for the opener. They've been coming out strong in preseason. One area that is a note is tight end Kelce. He ended up with a little bit of an injury. Travis Kelce, I believe, has a slightly sprained ankle, was reported yesterday. He did fine in the game, but coming off of that now, they are reporting he has a slightly sprained ankle, and they are counting on him to be a big-time player this season. They really like the output he had last year coming off of his first rookie year with an injury, and so they've been counting on him to become more and more of a standout star for them. It's a low ankle sprain, they are saying, and they do expect that he will be ready for their first regular season game. However, knowing that they have two games within a four-day period, it is something of a bit of concern for Andy Reid.
Yeah, and while we talked about them offensively being ready to go, I want to say that that's a great point on our part. It's not even a humble brag, but I think it's important to note that Kansas City, when you look at the NFL, they were the fourth best team in preseason on offense. So even though it wasn't necessarily stellar in their rankings, they definitely are performing offensively, and that's Andy Reid has them ready to go. Maybe it's the vanilla defenses. Maybe it's the addition of Jeremy Maclin, or who knows. But defensively, they're still up in the top 10 in preseason. Even if they were playing a vanilla defense against the teams they played, they're number 9. and they're looking pretty good defensively. So when we say they're ready to go, they are. The injuries are going to be a challenge, and it's going to be a challenge when they start to game plan. And, of course, the AFC West, the conference, or division, I should say, is very tough. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. A couple of things going on in Chiefs land. The quarterback Tyler Bray, he was placed on the non-football injury list. He has an ACL injury and is not ready to go, so he will be out. And Jeremy Maclin has been playing crazy good ball. What can you tell us about that?
You know, he's really had a red-hot preseason coming over from Philadelphia. You know, he's caught all seven of his first half targets in his last game, 65 yards and a touchdown. Really able to take care of the coverage, find the holes and the gaps, and he just has been extremely creative and a great pickup for the team. So that's something that they're excited about. You know, along with that, the team is expected to have Dontari Poe, who's on the active yet physically unable to perform this. They're expecting to have him early in the season is what they're currently telling us. Now, does that mean that he'll be right away? Well, there's a question as to whether or not they will do that or if they will put him on the six-game reserve PUP list. So that's something to keep an eye on. And during the meantime, Jay Howard is expected to fill in for him.
Well, he's a big physical presence in that middle, and I know that they want him there, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
What can you tell me from the land of the Bolts?
Well, we talked about the stadium, but their running game is struggling. And Melvin Gordon, we talked a little bit about this last week, comes from Wisconsin, and we threw up a caution, I don't want to say a red flag, but a cautionary flag over Wisconsin running backs and their ability to perform. We listed several, Ron Dane, Monty Ball, and others last week. Melvin Gordon, he's averaging 2.3 yards per carry. It seems like he's either overthinking it or that the game is going too fast, or maybe he's still slightly injured, but he's just not hitting the hole the way they hoped. And it's, you know, it's a work in progress, but Melvin Gordon is averaging 2.3 yards per carry and really struggling in pass protection, Darren. And that's important because Phillip Rivers needs that pass protection. We saw a few years ago when he had that terrible couple of years and wasn't getting that pass protection or didn't believe he could trust his wide receivers to catch and his running backs to block for him when there was that pressure. Who is gone in San Diego?
Well, you know, the Chargers didn't cut anyone of huge note, but they did make some roster moves that have some bigger name players that will be missing the season. They waived to the injured reserve list wide receiver Torrance Allen, cornerback Chris Davis, safety Gordon Hill, and also the offensive guard Melvin Miggs. All are expected to clear waivers and make it back to the injured reserve. Most notably, though, is Chris Davis, who is a cornerback, played in all 14 of their 16 games last season, and in 2014 was one of their bigger kick returners with, I believe it was around 400 yards returning on kicks. So kind of someone that they will probably miss a little bit, but along with that, you know, one area of the Chargers that a lot of people have been talking about, and I know preseason is meaningless when it comes to the stats, but the team is sixth overall in the NFL right now with preseason sacks. You got Melvin Ingram, Kyle Emanuel, and Nick Zunbar, both all of them lead the team with two sacks apiece, and you know, they have really been holding the offenses to only about 150 passing yards. So that's something that is an area they want to improve on, and they're trying to make the quarterback uncomfortable.
Well, I think they're doing that to a certain degree. They're fourth in the NFL in preseason defense, and they're lagging a little bit more in their offense, but they are still 11th in total offense in the NFL and their proficiency. So, yeah, that's preseason, of course. It's not the regular season stats. I think they would like to have the offensive side be cooking a little hotter right now, and certainly they'd like Melvin Gordon to be playing at a little better level than what he is. There's a lot of hope for Danny Woodhead being back and his ability to just make those plays that Danny Woodhead can do. But you're right, the defense has looked better, and maybe it's Mike Nolan coming in and helping that linebacking core that's really making the difference.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about the other three teams. Now let's talk about the final team in the AFC West here. In the final 4 minutes, we've got the Denver Broncos. And, you know, we talked earlier, what is wrong with Peyton Manning in the passing game?
He's not comfortable under center, or even if he is, he's not making the same decisions or having the same efficiency as he has in other formations, specifically shotgun or the pistol. And the idea was over the offseason he'd transition and be able to take care of that. It really hasn't happened. The better of the two quarterbacks from that position is actually Brock Osweiler, and it'll be interesting to see him play. I'm not saying he's a better quarterback than Peyton Manning. That's not in question at all. But Peyton is struggling, and so Denver's got to make a decision. And my personal thought would be I think you want to go with the coach's philosophy, and that philosophy is the run and the two tight end sets, and that's why John Elway brought him in. He believes in that, and late in his career it worked for him. But Peyton Manning has a strong will, and it's going to be an interesting ride. It doesn't mean Denver can't win, but it is going to be bumpy.
Well, you know, I guess that does beg the question then, should the Broncos go ahead and adjust to a pistol? A lot of people seem to think that they will. You know, the biggest issue, I think, is that Peyton Manning is missing the opportunity to really see the full defense. He's only able to get a look before, and then as he has to turn his back when he pulls out from under center, he's losing track of where that is and really hurting his overall throwing game. So one of those remedies would be the pistol. That would probably slow down their running attack a bit. The running attack's been looking great in the in the preseason. Brings us to the point of their running backs, Hillman and C.J. Anderson, are both really have been strong, along with Juwan Thompson. In this last game, Monte Ball didn't even get any playing time until late in the fourth quarter and is on the roster bubble, means he doesn't play any special teams.
Yeah, you know, just to put this in perspective, as troubling as it is for Denver fans with Peyton not throwing a touchdown and looking rather pedestrian, Denver's offense overall in the preseason is number one. And interestingly enough, their defense overall is number one. And both of those are by a long, long shot. It's not even close. Now, that doesn't mean it's the regular season, anoint them headed to the playoffs and Super Bowl. But keep it in perspective, there are struggles, but they're still converting because they have complementary parts. And I think it'll get worked out, but it may be rough along the way. You know, the Denver Broncos brought in the offensive lineman Evan Mathis last week, and Phil Taylor was let go from Cleveland. They may take a look at him as a nose tackle, another big presence in the middle to help spell Sylvester Williams. Are there any other roster moves that you've heard of kind of waving in the breeze in Broncoland?
You know, interestingly enough, on Hard Knocks on HBO last night, I don't know if you caught it or not, but they were replaying the trade talks between Rick Smith and John Elway, and John Elway did say that they were looking at trying to get rid of a linebacker. So that's something of note. And I guess the other question is, who is Phil Taylor?
Well, we'll see whether he's injured or not. But when we come back from the break, we'll wrap this up. We'll look at the games upcoming week four. And thank you for listening so far. Join us in the after segment.
Follow us on AFC West Show at AFC West Show and on AFCWestShow.com during the week for content. We'll be back. Welcome back to the AFC West Show After Hours. I am still here with Daryl, and we are talking AFC West football, Denver Broncos to be specific. Daryl, before the break, I asked you, who is Phil Taylor and what rumors do we have?
Well, Phil Taylor is a nose tackle from Cleveland, and he was drafted in the 2011 draft. He's been often injured, but has made his presence known. He's a big, stout defensive tackle, and he's missed 20 out of 64 games, had a couple knee injuries and stuff. He was cut by the Browns. His connection to Denver, besides the fact that Sylvester Williams doesn't have a solid backup or somebody to spell him or swap positions with, is that Tom Heckert, who is now working for Denver, helped make the draft of him.
That is a very good point, and I'm sure there are a few teams that are looking at him, Denver being one of them, that could make a move. So definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, interestingly enough, the rumor mill has it that one of the linebackers that could be ripe for the trading would be a Danny Trevathan. Often injured here in the past season and a half, but with that, he's coming into the last year of his contract with the Broncos, and Denver has been known to unload players that are on their last year of the contract, much as they did with Chris Clark. So something interesting to look at, and just hearing that conversation where Smith asked John Elway if they'd be interested in an inside linebacker rather than trading away a draft choice. And John Elway said, no, we actually have a couple that we're trying to get rid of. We're really deep at that level.
Yeah, and I don't think he said get rid of. I think it was work a deal for, because they do have a lot. They had to stockpile them. They didn't know if Brandon Marshall nor Danny Trevathan would come back from their injuries. Man, there's so much upside for Danny Trevathan, but he has been injured a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and who people need. I don't have any scuttlebutt on that other than to say that, hey, I heard the same thing you heard. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Now, we got some games coming up here on Thursday that some people say are meaningless. And for most of the teams and in the big picture, they are pretty meaningless. But for, you know, 12, 13 guys, they are very important. So I'm going to start off Kansas City at St. Louis. Is there anything you're looking for from this game?
You know, I'm really going to keep an eye on what happens with the Kansas City running game. We know Jamaal Charles won't be playing. Nile Davis is expected to get some carries. It'll be interesting to see how he does as the main back, whether he continues the dominance that he had last season or whether he whether he tails off. So that's something I'm going to be watching. For the most part, that is my biggest area, but I think it'll be interesting to see also whether this Kansas City team continues their hot streak that they've been on.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when we look at Arizona at Denver, you know that Peyton won't be playing. You're going to see a large dose of Brock Osweiler. Is there anything from Brock that you're looking for?
Well, you know, from what I understand, the Broncos really want to see, and according to Gary Kubiak, he has stated he wants to see if Brock Osweiler is able to lead the team, inspire the team, motivate the team. So can he take these second and third string players, make them better players? I think that's number one that I'll be watching. Number two is going to be to keep an eye on Cody Latimer and Jordan Norwood. We didn't get a chance to talk about them. An interesting development has come up because currently Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas are the number one wide receivers. The other three sets, the tradition had gone with Cody Latimer on the outside moving Emmanuel Sanders into the slot. However, with Sanders injured, you know, they moved Norwood in there. His pass game really shined in the slot, which would give the opportunity for Emmanuel Sanders to move back out. Cody Latimer, who is in his second season, didn't do much last season, and he has been lackluster in this. So I really want to watch that and also watch the battle between Capri Bibbs and Monte Ball for that final running back position.
Well, you brought up Monte Ball, and I was going to comment on that. He's going to get a boatload of carries, and I do think this is a make-or-break time. I'm not saying he's going to be cut, but potentially he is on the bubble. This is a guy that just hasn't looked good, and he's been given so many chances here. Doesn't mean he can't catch on with another team. He's great. I'm not sure what the issue is, but it'll be interesting to see if he can shut out. I remember Noshawn Moreno having a similar fate a couple years ago, and he shined and solidified his position on the team. So the defense looks like it's ready to go. The first-string offense needs some polishing, but I've been impressed with Brock Osweiler. And when Ronnie Hillman has been playing in that running back role in the second-string team, he's looked pretty darn good. So I think we'll see some interesting positional battles kind of solidify, but that's about all. Let's move on to San Diego and San Francisco.
You know, Sam, this will be an interesting game to see how this defense is able to slow down Colin Kaepernick, and if they are. See if they are for real, if they have the depth, that's one area they've been lacking the past couple of seasons. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how San Diego's defense performs against, you know, mostly won't have Colin Kaepernick, but the remainder of the San Francisco offense.
I was going to say, I was wondering if Kaepernick would even be in there. I think I want to see if they have any pass rushers in that second string that can keep the pressure up, because that's one thing they need, and their defense has been playing better. I also think it'll be interesting to look at some of those linebackers that have been challenging Manti Te'o and Donald Butler. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys step up and play when they bring it as a starter.
Finally, Daryl, what about Oakland at Seattle? What will you be watching for?
Wow. That, you know, that one's a tough one because you have a new coach and you have a team that is not quite as deep as some of the other teams. They're making strides, but it's going to take time. So I think what I'd be looking for is does Oakland have depth at the wide receiver position that can actually come in and play? And following that, the other question I have is, what about some of those positional battles on the defense? Where will people fit in? Who's going to shake out? But again, I do think that the starters are fairly, like a lot of teams, they're fairly penciled in, but it's a little more clear cut there because there's not the depth to challenge. You don't have that unexpected challenge.
You know, I think that's very true on that, and I'm kind of going to be interested to watch and just see, you know, whether they play Amari Cooper, and if so, how he does against these second and third string players, whether he is really going to step up and be just a dominant force, someone that could challenge Michael Crabtree or Rod Streeter, the current suspected starters. So that's something that will be interesting. Also, now that Trent Richardson's gone, we know that Roy Helu will be the third down back, so he might get some more time. It'll be interesting to see how he does. We know that Latavius Murray got injured last season, so I want to see how the backup plan looks as well. Those are a couple of the items I'm looking for. I'm also looking forward to a great holiday weekend. And I know that we got a little football here, and then next thing we know, in just over 7 days, 8 days to be exact, we will have NFL football.
You know, I want to jump back in for just a minute and talk about the Raiders real quickly. I know we got to go, but Christian Ponder is there, so it'll be interesting to see how he fares versus Matt McGloin. I knew there was a little bit of a quarterback challenge, and then again with Roy Helu and Michael Dyer there, you got Taywan Jones, and it'll be interesting to see how that works out. So there are some positional battles that might be fun to watch. That being said, it is game four, and unless you're a real fan of the team, it's tough to watch any of these games seriously.
You know, that is very true, except for the families and friends of these of these 22 players that will be heading out after this week. Saturday is a big day, and it's going to be a black Sabbath for a lot of players who get their walking papers and are asked to bring their playbooks with them to the coach's office.
It's true. Darren, enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Thanks for hanging with us, everybody, and I hope you all have a great Labor Day weekend. Darren, I'll let you sign us off.
Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Follow us at AFC West Show or on Facebook, afcwestshow.com. We look forward to talking to you next time. For all the players that are on their way out, here's to you.
You know I'm a dreamer, but my